Good morning, everyone. I don't need that. I've got no notes. If you're like me, you might enjoy a good heist movie or a TV program. Mission Impossible was used to be a heist genre. And one thing about the heist, one of the parts of a heist movie is that there's the plan where they all sit down and they go, we're going to have to do this and this and this. And because it's a movie, it's always like impossible. It's just like the security system's the best in the world and it's like this and you can't get this and that. But anyway, they managed to, because it's so important to do it, so they go ahead and do it. Well, what I wanted to say this morning, my one point, was that evangelism is really hard. It is like the impossible heist movie. But unfortunately, and it's sad, that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to die in their sins if they don't know about Jesus. And that's sad. And I guess it starts with prayer. But I just wanted to highlight that as important. And I'm going to demonstrate why it's hard just simply from the early days of Chapel Hill, which I'm going to cover. And I'm going to just talk about Northside, our first place of meeting, which was the rugby club. We went to the Christian school for a few weeks, and then they wanted to modify the room. And then we went to the rugby club, and we stayed there for maybe 2 years, but I think it was definitely one because I've got some photos of our year birthday. And the reason we moved on was simply because they had moved out to Flagstaff. So that's why we left. What's that? Yeah, they modified the building, we had to move on. It was a bit like the cloud, you know, the moving on and everyone's time to go, you know. So I want to talk about three particular evangelistic outreaches that we did, and I just like to put it in the context of it. It was a bit like a heist movie. It was really hard and very difficult to do. So this was probably early on when we first arrived, and that's what it looked like, the rugby club. It was right in the middle of Enderley. It's right in a poorer area of Hamilton. The majority of people probably are Maori there. And so we would set up our church in this rugby club, and all the equipment, we didn't really have much storage. We had a van and we would take home stuff, and it was probably during that time that Shirley learned to play drums, and they were our yellow drums that came we took along with us. And so Shirley has been playing for this church since at least whatever. So she's going to reference that one again. So this is just to show her that. She hasn't got that photo. And the first thing that was really hard was the fact that we were in an environment that wasn't really churchy. It was very pub-like, really. And we would set ourselves up, and you can see the kind of things. You know, like we've got a cross here. Up there we had the Waikato bit of beer, right? So we were uncomfortable as a church. And we're all enthusiastic and we wanted to do outreaches. And this was our first year there, just to give you an idea of what it was like. And the people who came along, that's some of Hillcrest though, because it was a party celebration. And there's one other more there. But this is what I wanted to talk about, this one here. So one of the things that we did, which was pretty risky, was we set this yellow tent up, which was belonged to, was it yours, Jeff, or it was OAC, anyway. But anyway, we were going to do an outreach, and the church was going to go and do a beach mission in Ahopi, and we thought we'd do a trial run in Enderley, since we're already there. And so we set this yellow tent up in the middle of the rugby park out there. And everyone said, this is going to get stolen or torn down or whatever. But it stayed up there for about a week. And we run a program, and lots of kids came along. And we told them about Jesus, and we told them how to be saved. And we told them all the stories, and we did things like puppets and whiteboards, things that we normally do with those kind of outreach. And then it was so successful, we thought we would carry it on. And so we did a similar program actually in the rugby club on Sunday afternoons. And I remember very distinctly what this was like. We were living in a house that was half been built, so it wasn't very comfortable. But we would actually just like zombies would just force ourselves to walk out, get into the van and drive to the place and then run this program. And it just seemed so hard. Just emotionally, it was just so draining. And it was just hard to believe how it was so hard. Anyway, God gave me a dream one day which encouraged me to keep going. And in this dream, I had a rubber. And as I was rubbing it, I don't know if you, when you rub a rubber, it makes a little curl of the rubber comes off. Well, that little curl came off. And then all of a sudden, the curl came alive and turned into some insect. And then it grew wings, and then it just flew away. And I was in my dream, because everything seemed normal in dreams. It was like, uh-oh, this is a problem. We've just introduced a new insect into New Zealand's economy. And this thing could breed, and who knows what on earth the effect would be. And then God made the connection between what we were doing, because we had all these kids, and we were doing, you know, stuff like that. With kids were doing drawings and paintings, and they had rubbers and pencils. And the Lord was saying to me, was saying that when you do this, a miracle happens, and that life is made, but you don't have any control of it. And it's scary. You don't know what that life's going to do. It's going to disappear somewhere. And we just and that was one of the encouragements we did. And the other outreach, so there was the tent mission, which was 1 week. There was this thing that we did Sunday afternoon. And the third one was about every month we would run a program for the actual community, and sort of a night program. And I do remember this one day, and I said it to somebody. And I said, it feels like the ground is iron and the sky is brass. That's what it felt like. That's what the outreach felt like to me. The ground is iron, the sky is brass. And we just carried on and did that. And out of that time in Enderley, we picked up a person called Brian, who then produced a life that was really uncomfortable for us in many ways. But we produced out of that a person, a life. Person who I'm going to be glad to see, because he's died now, and I'm going to be glad to see him in heaven. He's a friend. And it's all worth it. And I want to encourage us, because we're responsible to reach out to people. And it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. You can't expect it just to all happen. It's going to take time and prayer. It's going to take commitment. It's going to take a plan. And you've got to think about it, and it's going to look impossible. And that's the experience we've had. And you don't necessarily see a lot. But things do happen, and there is miracles that happen. Just like that rubber, insects fly off and life happens, and that life affects other things. So that's my part.
I'll take the stick. Cool. Is someone else going to do the pictures for me? Rototuna. Gosh. Miracles really do happen. Yeah. It's my turn now. Okay, so the song we sang this morning, Great is the Lord, That was my choice to sing this morning. Philip asked me during the week if I had a song that kind of represented our time or some of the earlier days, and I thought of a few, but that one came to mind. And the line, "For the works you've done in our lives," was, I guess, significant. And you could read it as, "For the work we've done at Chapel Hill," or "For the works that God has done in our individual lives." Either is quite applicable, probably. And plus, that song just is really representative of that era. I don't know how many of you are around going to church in those days, but the songs were very ballad-like and big, you know, dramatic turnarounds and all that, and loved them. And there was one song that I particularly loved and would have loved to do this morning, but it was called "You Are Lord." And it's probably not the one you're thinking of, but it's a song by Parachute Band, and it was so tricky that we used to call it the train wreck song, because if the musicians, it had so much syncopation and chord changes in it that if the musicians did anything wrong, the whole song was derailed. And but we loved to play it and get it right. It gave us a real sense of achievement, and you know, it was kind of like, you know, that the glory really did come down if we got to the end of that song without a mistake. Anyway, I digress. So it was in 1994, along with Alex and Judy, that we were really young, newly married couples, keen for a bit of a challenge and a change of scene. So we did not hesitate to join the branch from Chapel Hill, from Hillcrest Chapel, shall I say. Gosh, you've got to keep your wits about you, so many names. And for me, music and worship has always been a significant ministry for me and a significant source of friendships over the years. Can we have the next slide? Sorry, that one. Oh, so that's me back. Well, it's not even at the beginning. This is me two children later at the site before Chapel Hill was where this site is here. And so it's also been a significant source of friendships in the days when the gender ratio of male and female musicians in our worship team was much more even, how things have changed. I did a bit of a count up. I reckon at least 60 people have been part of the worship team, and at least a third, if not more, of those were females. You know, you could always count on a female pianist or a female singer, no longer the case. Anyway, I learnt my musical chops at Hillcrest as a bass player, and with the branch, we were blessed with getting a good share of the musicians. We got a lot of pianists, a lot of guitarists, and a lot of bass players, and some really good worship leaders as well. But we got no drummers. And so, being a problem solver at heart, soon after our move to the rugby club, I decided I would try and learn the drums. Certainly, new churches give you the opportunity to do things that you may not otherwise consider pursuing. I don't think we've ever lacked drummers since those days. yeah. So my good friend Linda Capes, if we could put the next... Oh, so there's Alex. Oh, go back to Alex and Judy. Show them. Look at them. Aren't they gorgeous? So that's Ella there. Yeah. Okay, next photo. Oh, so this is one of the, this is Wendy Bryson, if you know her, but that was also back in the early days, one of the women that I used to play with a lot. She was a fabulous pianist, and we had some good times together. But the next photo, so this is my friend Linda. Who remembers Linda? Okay, so in my own opinion, Linda was a pioneer in worship leading in this church. And the two of us would spend hours discussing the finer details of church worship. We always thought there was something more we could do, you know, some way we could change it up, some way we could make God be more present, all of that stuff. And this is us at the 40 Days of Purpose celebration, which we had in 2005 when we sort of studied that book. And we did a missions ministry thing outside. And you can see behind us, we've got a vision statement. And our vision back then was that God be glorified and people have the opportunity to encounter and respond to God in spirit and truth. So, anyway, it seems rather funny to think back to a Sunday probably 17 years ago when Linda had, with much fear and trembling, decided to make the very bold move to lead from the centre stage, like here at Chapel Holt. Now, if you can show me the next photo, that's where we used to worship lead from. That's where the band used to be, and that's here. We did that for probably 17, 18, how long have we been doing it here? Probably 8 years, so 12 years we... And I think it was a bit of a Brethren tradition in that Holtcrest Chapel always had their band off to the side. And when Northgate built, they've done the same thing as far as I know. So it was a really big deal. And Linda said, oh, I really want to do it. I really just feel that God's telling me to stand in the middle of the room. And so I remember praying with her and encouraging her, go for it. And it just seemed like such a... big deal at the time, going against the grain, going against everything we knew to be, godly, I suppose. So it was about 8 years ago, I think, that Philip decided that he'd have a go in the middle. He probably didn't realise he was walking in Linda's footsteps, but ever since, this is where we've been, and that seems quite normal now, do you think? Quite a good idea to be in the middle where people can see you. Anyway, so it was just before Linda moved to Tauranga that she suggested that I should try worship leading. I was very hesitant to do so, as Chapel Hill had been blessed with so many very capable worship leaders, and I had always been a musician rather than a singer. So I thought a surefire way to avoid this calling was to insist that at least two more people out of the blue would need to suggest the same thing to me. That's biblical, right? The rest is history. I reckon, I've probably told you that, but anyway, yeah. So, but my real claim to fame is that, we're talking about it this morning, that I think I've played more than anyone. I think I've been up here the front more than anyone else. I don't have the longest history, which I'll tell you about in a minute. I think Greg's actually had the longest time here playing, but I think I've done it more. So that's my claim to fame. Anyway, what's the next photo, by the way? Okay, there you go. Getting this building completed was a huge part of our lives for most of 1999, maybe before a little bit as well. Hudson Alex did a significant amount of pulling wires through the ceilings and walls, and I painted walls, and by the locks, next photo, Judy varnished the wooden ceilings. Yeah. So that was all done, just by people in the church at the time, just like that, all varnished. Yeah. The upkeep of these wires and walls still remains a part of our lives. For instance, Hudson reprogrammed the church burglar alarm yesterday, and Judy and I have talked about setting a date to repaint the meeting room. So there you go. So although we were foundation members and are still here today, some of you will be aware that the Millers were absent for 5 years when we did what we will politely call a missionary journey to another local church. This was prompted by, among other things, a feeling of disconnection for us with the rapid growth of the church, and an offer from another church to lead their music ministry. I had just begun studying for a music degree in drums, of all things, and in this time also completed a diploma in ministry. This 5 years was mostly a good experience for us that suddenly ended very badly for me, and for me especially, and we returned to Chapel Hill suffering burnout and disillusionment. You may ask, why did we come back? The answer is simple. Our kids wanted to and made the decision for us. It is not a small thing for your children to feel comfortable in church. And for us, for our children, this place has been like a second home. Ann Pallison reminded me last week how she used to often joke with my kids and the shepherd kids about having a bed here. Of course, it has been a thrill for me to have my children, as well as Alex and Judy's children, join me in the worship team. What is the next slide? Oh yeah. This is how it all started. So this is a talent show at the church in 2001. Aren't they cute? So cute. Janie's singing All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. She got her two front teeth knocked out in the bath not long before that, and so she did very well, actually. Yep. So we have been back 9 years, and my story is that, yes, I call this place home. Being here and being part of this community has restored my faith in church life and has helped me heal some spiritual wounds through being gently coaxed back into serving and using my gifts. After feeling like I never wanted to play music or worship ever again, actually, I've learned a whole lot of new skills here. Being involved in creative installations for the community and for special events has been good for my soul. Working alongside Philip and Rebecca and others has been a privilege, as has been part of turning the foyer into a cafe space, and, well, learning to make coffee. The renovation of the cafe space was, I believe, an important step for the fellowship aspect of Chapel Hill. Personally, it has been a place that I have cherished, and I have spent many hours here during the week drinking coffee and getting to know at least some of you better. Along with Judy, I think I'm pretty sure you were part of Mainly Music at the beginning, is that right? Yep. Part of the startup committee for Mainly Music in late 1998. I think that's right, the date anyway. I had the privilege of working along some phenomenally gifted and dedicated people over the years in this ministry. So you see, I am a team player, a church enthusiast, and I'm most happy working with others on a task for God. This is my happy place. So finally, if I guess my experience is that God really gives us a vision or a task for others to do, but gives us a vision that aligns with the gifting and passion that we have. The significant and long-lasting ministries in this church have been built on the vision of ordinary people with some gifting and lots of determination and faithfulness. So my encouragement to you would be that rather than wait for someone else to tell you what to do, pursue those things you are passionate about. Take initiative and make yourself available for God to use you. Even when I heard Bernie, where's she gone, give that prophecy this morning, all I thought was, you know, sometimes we get a little bit lazy and we expect someone else to be doing something, and yet we're frustrated because nothing's happening. And God's prompting us sometimes to say, what is it you want to do? What is it you love to do? What is it you're good at? And sometimes we just need to take the first step and perhaps gather some people around us, get talking about some things, and amazing things can happen. Judy Shepherd. By the way, I mean, I said we came back for our children, but actually Judy made me come back as well. And, yeah, wouldn't be without them, actually.
Cool. Hello. Get the right side. So I guess living alongside people and being closely involved in their lives is really important to me. So God has graciously, Alex, I see your hands. So God has graciously held me and my family at this community of Chapel Hill for coming up to 26 years in September. It's been that we've met as a church. 21 years in this building in August. So as I think of this, deciding to be a part of any faith community, of which Chapel Hill has been that for us, it's actually a guarantee of many ups and downs if you decide to immerse yourself in people's lives. And I can say that that's my story. Ups and downs. The years of, I think, many, many years of conversations I've had, the encouragement and teaching from the front, the worship, the meals together, the prayer, the working bees, the times I've come away from Sunday mornings absolutely full, and the times that I've gone home still lonely. The frustrations of people being misunderstood, but doing the best you can with God. The times of being too busy with activities and doing, and the encounters with God through others. And the genuine interest shown towards my children, which is a really wonderful thing as a mum. You treasure that. I've been in various leadership roles at times and been aware of tensions and disagreements and harsh words spoken. And I must admit that it can be a lonely journey at times. And, you know, there's people here who will be able to relate to that. I've often asked God, how do I continue well in relationships after conflict? And do I even want to? And have I got the energy for it? So it's a real tough one for me, one that's, you know, an ongoing thing, I guess, for us in our lives, how to continue well in relationships. And I guess that, to be honest, this is a heavy and sad side of things in our Chapel Hill story for me. There are unresolved and conflicted relationships of people who have come and gone. Not all people who have gone have gone under a cloud, but some have, and some are still unresolved, and that is sad for me. But God, you know, through this has gently led me through, and over the years I've felt much loss as people have moved to other church communities. That didn't make sense, did it? Okay. So I'm very grateful for God graciously holding me through these times, you know, because there has been a sense of loss as people have moved out of my own personal community in this Chapel Hill community. I've had to learn to let go and definitely to forgive and to trust him. He's helping me, still helping me to not be so affected by people, but instead letting him be my reference point instead of situations that are out of my control, really. And also realise that it's not all about me, which is not a bad thing to learn. So, my growth with God through life with others has been a subtle growth, but it's been hugely significant, and, you know, that's actually where things are at. That's how God grows us and challenges us and encourages us. So I was just reading where Jesus talked about a new command I give you to love one another. As I've loved you, you must love one another. And by this, men will know you are my disciples. So basically how we love one another really is how others out in the world will see God's love. That's how they'll see him, by how we love one another. And, you know, we're encouraged to build each other up and not meeting together. So, yeah, keep going. That's me. Here comes the other half.
Oh, all right, stick as well. I wondered what the stick was about, actually, so I had to find out. So it's quite important that I hold it. Yeah. That commanding look. So we had quite a good time the other night talking about what we were going to say and reminiscing about things that would be completely irrelevant to most of you. But so there's a few highlights, and there's how do you squeeze 26 years into 20 minutes? No, it's probably more than that already. Our path to Hillcrest Chapel. Yeah, for Judy and I, going to Hillcrest was a bit of a test, really, in some ways. We weren't married. And we figured that an important thing was to be able to go to a church that both of us felt comfortable at, and because we were kind of quite diverse backgrounds, which is an interesting little conversation in itself. But we went along and we got involved and went along to a home group with Kemp and Ann, and Millers were there, I think, and many other people that probably aren't here, that we got to know very well. And quite a few of them came to Northgate and Chapel Hill as part of the branch. So that was a strong group of friends that we met. In those days, also, Hillcrest, the elders had taken the bold move in the Brethren world of allowing women to fully participate in all the ministries and public speaking and teaching and all those sorts of things, and later on, church leadership.
And so that also, I don't know, it's one of these sort of things you observe. At the time also, there was sort of quite a marked difference in terms of attitude towards women and ministries and things like that, in quite a positive way that perhaps other places didn't have. And that sort of is something that stood out to me, and that was probably a very strong value that the church has maintained all the way through, and it's been a good thing. We got married at Chapel Hill, Hillcrest, and Kemp did the ceremony and all that sort of stuff, and we rented a house within walking distance of Hillcrest, and we were kind of over there for a while. However, this whole branching thing came along, and we decided that we would be a part of it and head north, and kind of our family were sort of more on this side than the south side of town, so it all seemed like the right thing, and we put our names in the definitely leaving column. So, yeah, that was part of it. And so, you know, that whole journey began. So Hudson showed you a bunch of photos and that, and one of the aspects of having church at Fairfield College was that, you know, you had to unpack each day, get set up and do the whole thing, and then pack it all down and maybe have a cup of coffee if you were lucky, and then do it all again. And so we, Hudson and I and some others, I'm sure, made several technological innovations that would help us with a PA system, and it had a box with wheels on it, and everything had drawers and bits and pieces in it that would pack down, that was quite nifty, and things to help, a big thick cable with all the microphone leads and all that sort of stuff all bound together, and to try and make it quick to set up and tear down. So yeah, we certainly didn't miss all those sorts of things when we came here, just the pure luxury of having the wires and the wall and everything set up, and you just wander in and flick the switch on, and it's like, oh yeah, it's quite tedious, isn't it, really? So yeah, that was an interesting thing. We had, I'm pretty sure it was 4 work teams that were kind of responsibilities, and I think there were 3 jobs and 4 teams, so one team had a break. But we really got to know people. That's one of the things that, I knew everybody's name. You know, we would, that much time spent in just doing bits and pieces, that there was a familiarity, and that was something that probably really missed when finally we got here and a whole lot of people showed up, and it's like, oh my goodness, what happened to our, you know, group of 120 or whatever it was that we knew each other well and stuff, you know. Yeah, so that was an interesting thing. And when Brad and I were down in Christchurch last year, we visited a church that Brad had ended up going along to. And they were doing a, you know, vaguely similar thing. They were in a public building, a school building, and they were packing up, and they'd get set up each day. They had way more stuff than us, though. But they had a truck, and they had a whole lot of modules that wheels on it, and they'd all unfolded. They had a coffee machine, they had a barbecue, they had a whole stage that, and lights and PA, and it was like, oh my goodness, I looked at all that, I thought, this must be a lot of work compared to what we were doing. I thought we were busy, but it all, those things all came back to me, I was just observing it all. So one of the things about all that time was the missions, and Hillcrest and Chapel Hill had quite a strong culture of mission activity, mission supporting missions, local missions, overseas missions, people come back and stay with us. And so Judy and I were sort of trying to tally up everybody who was on that kind of list over the time, and there's quite a large group of people. Some of them are still with us, but Jeff and Jill, they were started with Prison Fellowship and then Prison Care Ministries. David and Jenny House were with MMM. Matt and Margaret Coyle were Student Life. Mark and Joyce Budenberg at East West College. Judy Bennett, and then later Warren Salisbury doing Scripture Union in New Zealand. Some of the overseas ones are Biz and Gabe Jens with Interserve. They were a couple that we spent home group with for several years. Got to know them really well. Gavin and Michelle McConnell, early introductions of them, where they were living in Mongolia, and he was talking about the art of learning to drink fermented mare's milk. And I think the phrase he said, "I'll get it." The prayer was, "I'll get it down. You keep it down, God." funny how particular things stick. And so Gavin and Michelle had several different activities, and part of their time was here as on staff for several years, and now they're up North Auckland running Piringa. Mike and Cecile Hughes went with SIM, went to Niger doing literacy. Marie Scully was someone who was with us for the duration of the build of the church, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, a fair bit. And then she ended up going to Africa doing sort of accounting and finance, church finance, mission finances, including carrying sacks of money around and distributing it, physical cash to all these people at huge risk and craziness. It was, oh my goodness. Phil and Jill Tate, who you've possibly seen more recently, they were a part of the church on and off in different overseas missions. Brett and Michelle Nell, who spent several years training, getting ready to go to MAF as a pilots over in North Australia. Arnhem Land, yeah, there you go. And typically people would go to there to learn how to fly to go to other parts of MAF, but actually Brett and Michelle had a very strong sense of going there to be a part of that mission, and they had a very strong calling to be in the community there with the Yongle people, and it's a wonderful story if you ever get to hear it. John and Wendy have also become part of the mission crew overseas at Myanmar with a group of people over there, many of whom I've got to meet over the years, so that's another very interesting story. And another couple that weren't kind of missionaries as such officially, but were certainly associated with us and went to live in Taiwan, Ratu and Tania Ratu, doing English ESOL training, things like that. Again, very interesting kind of life ministries. And now we have 24/7 ministry in the church, so it's another subtly different, but another new opportunity. And it's one of the good things is if you get to grow up with people who do this sort of stuff, or if you're involved with them at the beginning and being able to support them on the way through, it's such an enriching life experience. And, you know, particularly young guys, it would be, or younger people, if you've got the opportunity to partner with people like that, take it, get involved, be a part of their support network. Hudson sort of alluded to one of the colourful characters, Brian. Yeah, he was an interesting person, become obviously a part of our lives. I can very distinctly remember certain events and conversations that are quite relevant to me. But he lived with a number of us over the years and that sort of thing. But he became a real friend, and it was interesting. Many people will have their own sort of sense of what that means, because he was a friend to a lot of people, really, and journeyed with him for many years. And I really got to understand the complexities of people who struggle with mental health. And that relationship taught me a lot of things about how to value people who are different without trying to fix them or trying to make them normal. They too are made in the image of God, and we do well to get our minds around that. Yeah, there's a lot of things that I learned and insights that, you know, God showed me or Brian related to me that, they were quite amazing, really. So, some reflections. After 5 years of a whole lot of voluntary effort, you know, Chapel Hill was opened. It was quite a long stage, and there's some photos there that you saw of snapshots of things. There was a whole heap of effort in between all of that. And, from a very large group of people. And when we arrived here, we were suddenly surrounded by people that we didn't know, as I kind of referred to earlier, and we sort of lost a sense of identity, I think. And, I sort of grieved that a bit. I also remember feeling rather indignant at the time that people waited until all the work was done. They could have come earlier. I mean, you know. Really, come on. That sort of attitude is really, you know, one that the Lord clearly speaks against, you know, the workers that all receive the same wages for working for all day versus 1 hour, and it's like, okay, yeah. Yeah, while there's been a lot of activity over the years, I've grown to appreciate the walking alongside and journeying with people. And bit by bit, each of us get transformed to be more like and to Christ-likeness. Obviously, we're not there yet because we're still here. So obviously, there's things that we've got to learn. But don't overlook that. And having observed it and been involved in leadership of different kinds, I've grown to think that life is much more about who we are becoming. Just as important as what we do or projects or, you know, things that we do in the church. And I think some of the things that Shirley talked about, you know, the change in how we can do community by shifting all of our, you know, morning tea at the front instead of out there. Once, for a long time it was out there. I mean, for a lot of people here, you would not know that it was different, but that was a significant thing. And it's kind of surprising how much effort that took, actually. Yeah, it was odd. But anyway, it's all done, and it's a wonderful thing. Thank you, Shirley, for pushing and making it all happen, and for the other people that were involved. It was great. Having observed and been involved, I know, I've said that. Also, journeying with people, I've learnt to sometimes you can help and encourage people to change, and then sometimes you just have to journey with them and support them because people, you know, a problem can't be fixed or a situation can't be changed, and yet for someone who, you know, spends most of my day trying to fix things, that's actually kind of been a hard lesson to learn, that one, because you can run yourself ragged trying to change the world or not. And I've got a young guy at work who feels the need to try and fix everything. Well, kind of. And I can relate to some of those sorts of attitudes, but I've either got tired and old and lost some enthusiasm, or I've learnt some things, and I'd like to think that I'd learnt some things, but yeah. And so, you know, I've had to learn that it's not all up to me, and I don't have to feel the need to fix everything. So this has taken a long time to learn. Also, I've learnt that leadership can be quite difficult and lonely for people, for the leaders, and I've had to learn how to support and be a friend to people in different contexts and to support them as they struggle with the various challenges in leadership. And and so, you know, love your leaders, support them, you know, ask them how they're getting on, support them, find ways that you can help is always a great thing. That'll do. I don't suppose anyone's got questions, have they, of any of us? Great. Okay, you've lost your opportunity. Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. Hope that's helpful, and hopefully, if you want to chat to us about things that you might, how did this happen or how did that happen? I mean, we might know or not, but yeah, it's certainly been a long journey, and there's certainly, you know, there's a few little highlights or memorable things, but there's a whole heap of other parts to the journey that perhaps are, you know, personal reflections or time to have a chat with us. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we've got a photo album. Oh, yeah, sweet. So, yeah, we'd... Yeah. Oh, it would be good. If curious, you've got some time, it would be good to reflect on some of those and dig them out. Okay, I think we're done.
Thank you, Hudson, Shirley.